So what I'm going to share with you today is the outcome of about 6 months of research that the Microsoft team has done on mobile application development. We talked to, all told, north of 400 developers in one-on-one interviews, not just developers, but also architects and CTOs and CEOs. We performed 16 focus groups across 4 cities. We had a bunch of telephone calls, a bunch of usability studies, and what you're going to see here is really like a unique perspective on what the state of mobile development, and specifically hybrid app development, looks like today. It's, as Martin said, it's rapidly evolving, so this, I think, will probably be relevant for the next year, and maybe I'll get to come back and see you again in a year and see, tell you what's kind of updated. Sound like a good time? Yeah? Awesome. Sweet. So here's kind of where we got to things. Like, after the end of it, here's the big thesis statement of the entire presentation. There's this guy. You guys might have been familiar with him, heard him before. His name's Everett Rogers. He was a professor, scholar, sociologist, author, all-around swell guy. And he came up with this idea about the diffusion of ideas, right? And actually, I'll give you back to the thesis statement there. So the diffusion of innovations is really just a theory to explain how technology, diffuses throughout the marketplace. You guys may have seen this chart before. And what I want to kind of call your attention to is there's really two different large segments of apps that are being built out there today. So there's consumer apps, and consumer apps are what you're going to find out there in the public stores. They're what, you know, where businesses are making their living 99 cents at a time through individual app sales, through in-app purchases and the like. And the fact of the matter is that from all of the different organizations that we talked to, all the developers we talked to, we learned that, you know what, this is kind of a late market. It's a pretty mature market. We know exactly how to do this. The shops that are out there that are delivering the Angry Birds of the world know exactly how to build an app, how to deliver it to consumers, how to generate demand, and how to go about that kind of that iterative development workflow that results in constant improvement. Now, for these developers, for these organizations, UX is understandably the top priority. They want to deliver fast, rich, beautiful animations and slick transitions because they're making all of their money, like I said, 99 cents at a time. But for enterprise applications, for business applications, a lot of these organizations who are making their money through sale of goods and services, and their primary revenue stream is not through the software that they generate, these businesses are just starting to transition from early adopters and from a place where really they were building all of their applications and delivering all of their internal line of business applications through the web or through desktop applications. They're starting to make the jump to mobile. And as they make that jump to mobile, these organizations generally are kind of fumbling around trying to find an easy way to get there, a way that doesn't cost them an arm and a leg, because all of that software that they're building, it's a cost center. That software costs them money. It does not contribute to their overall revenue stream. It just detracts from their profit. And so these organizations are looking for ways to take their existing skills, their existing kind of resources, and bring them into this mobile app economy. For these businesses, what we tend to find is that time to market is their top priority. And here, time to market is kind of a proxy for cost, because if you think about it, you get it to market faster, well, it took less time, it probably takes less cost. Same thing for when they deliver updates. Now, I said that we talked to just a gangbusters number of developers and CIOs and CTOs and architects, and like, here's a brief sample of some of the things that we're starting to hear. Okay, so I've kind of divided it up here based upon role within the organization, because that gives you a good idea about what people are thinking at different levels of the organization. And at the CEO level, like, really, this is all about, I got to control cost. Make it cheaper. Help me deliver the product that's actually making my business money. Help me deliver that and cost me as little as you possibly can. And in the end, what they're typically looking for is a way that they can not just control the costs, but bundle the costs so that they've got one or two or three vendors. Move it over by a notch, a little bit to the right, and you've got your developers and your solution architects and your dev leads. These people are ultimately charged with delivery of the application, and for them, we see a different range of kind of priorities or criteria that they're using to evaluate the decisions that they make. They're not just looking at the cost, but they're also looking at the feature set that the platforms offer. At this level, they're generally making a choice between Xamarin, between native script, between going native entirely, between delivering a mobile web solution and delivering a hybrid solution. Like I said, I'm sick, so I'm going to take a little water, hydrate. I generally try not to drink when I'm on stage. Company policy, can't drink while you're working, but a little bit of water, I'm going to make an exception. All right. So besides security, they're also looking to kind of measure the performance of their application. And here I just don't mean, you know, how many people are using it, although that's an important thing. We all like to know kind of where apps are being used, but also on the analytics side, where their applications are running into problems, where they've got problems with crashes or bugs or errors or latency from a performance perspective. And so at the architect level, there are a lot of decisions being made around how we actually monitor the health of our development team and the deployment of our app and our app's behavior in the marketplace. And one that I kind of want to put a little bit of an underline here is the one at the very bottom of that middle column, that I tried cross-platform 6, 7, 12 months ago, and it totally burned me. Screw that. I'm not going cross-platform because I just wasted my time with it. You know what? This is something that we hear with a relative frequency, where organizations tried some kind of cross-platform strategy, whether that was hybrid development or Xamarin or NativeScript or something else, Unity, C++, it could be anything. But because of the maturity of the technologies, they just weren't there yet, or they, even within their organization, did not yet, hadn't accrued the skills to know how to take advantage of those cross-platform technologies. And so maybe they're kind of erring a little bit towards the native side of things because they think that's just a safer choice. At the IT manager and the dev manager, read kind of the human resources level, we hear a different set of requirements. And this is really all about how do we get the people into our organization that have the skills to deliver these apps? And frankly, it's a really hard problem. Sure, in some of the major metropolitans, there might be a lot of, you know, strong native iOS developers or strong Android developers. But as you get out of the tech centers, finding those competent developers at a reasonable and affordable price is really hard. Even in some of the major metropolitans, finding those developers, there's so much competition in the marketplace that it is difficult to hire in these developers and still be effective at controlling your overall costs. So that's kind of a range of the concerns that we hear from a lot of these organizations at the different levels. And all of that kind of sets the stage for why some of these organizations end up developing along the hybrid path. So let's take a look at what that path looks like, right? So it usually starts with some kind of pilot application. Organizations say, you know what? I've been doing web for a long time. I'm ready to actually kind of try doing some kind of mobile application. Maybe because I need to start to support offline. Maybe it's because of the consumerization of the marketplace or of IT. Whatever. They decide they're ready to make the jump. And in this case, they try a pilot app, and it's usually they try to contain it. I call it a pilot app because they're either containing it to one, two, or three developers within their organization who are just going to take a little nibble off and try to build some type of small application. They'll usually do it just for one platform. Or maybe they'll hire an outside agency. And they'll say, agency, hold our hand while we kind of figure this out in our first time. It's kind of like a first date, right? So after that, after they, you know, they've built their first app, maybe they've worked with an agency to do it, they're feeling kind of cocky, they're ready to take it on, okay. So they broaden that out. They take that application and they build it and they make it a little bit bigger. Or they maybe try to bring a second app and they bring it out to their wider development team. So at this point, they're usually trying to maybe start thinking about adding in an extra platform, but they're not there yet. It's really not until they get to stage two, or stage three in this case, where they add in an extra platform. And this is the moment, this is the pivotal moment where they start to think about cross-platform solutions because they have that cold sweat in the middle of the night where they realize, holy shit, I just wrote all this code, all this business logic, and now I've got to rewrite that in a different language. And not only that, not only am I going to have to rewrite it for that first time, but I'm also going to have to maintain those two, maybe even eventually three or four code bases into infinity. So this is the moment where a lot of organizations start to think about cross-platform development and start to make the choice between the, four, five different options that are out there. This is where they start to look back at their existing investments, at their existing skill sets. In a lot of cases, their existing skill sets are primarily in the web space. They've been building web applications for the last 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 years, and that's where they've got strong capabilities. And so this is when Cordova or PhoneGap or any of your other kind of hybrid variants start to look really attractive. Now, stage four is a special, special place. Stage four is where those organizations have really kind of got the hang of building the actual application itself, but not only that, they also start to develop a mature DevOps workflow where they integrate continuous integration, maybe even continuous deployment, where they've got all of their unit tests and their UI automation just singing, and it's all highly optimized. I'll be honest with you. Of the, 500-600 different organizations that we talk to, once you include all the focus groups and the personal one-on-one interviews, maybe 15-20% of them have actually gotten to this place. This is why I say that for enterprise development, for mobile application development in the enterprise, we're really in the early majority. No one or very few have gotten to a place where they've mastered this skill yet. And so if you, as an organization, are starting to think about this and you're not yet to this DevOps place, it's cool, man. Don't worry about it. You don't have to be on the bleeding edge. If you're there at building a pilot app or bringing it in-house, you're there with the majority. All right, so in the context of that, let's take a look at who out there is actually kind of succeeding from a tools perspective at delivering kind of tool sets, technologies, and platforms that make mobile application development possible. Now, a lot of you may be familiar with this, you know. Analysts have their uses, they're great sometimes, and this is one case where I think it's a kind of a helpful benchmark. The Gartner Magic Quadrant. This particular Magic Quadrant is for the mobile application development platform. Gartner releases lots of different Magic Quadrants. It gets abbreviated MADP because the technology industry loves its acronyms. More drinking on stage. So here's the way to read this. Along your x-axis, you've got ability to execute. This is how good are these organizations at building tools, at building platforms that enable businesses to actually build an end-to-end solution, right? Everything from initial development to security to packaging and publishing to MDM and MAM solutions. For those of you not up on your three-letter acronyms, MDM is mobile device management, MAM is mobile application management. Basically, these are the ways that you secure your data once it's on the device. On the Y scale, you've got completeness of vision. And really, this is, in a large way, these platforms' ability to articulate where they're going with their technology and how you should put all of the parts together. So the interesting thing about this magic quadrant is that 9 of those 20 are all hybrid solutions. And the vast majority of those are the ones that are in the top half and even pushing over towards the right half. What this tells me is that hybrid application development as a tool, as a technology, as a platform is very mature. It's very capable of executing. And because it's been around, actually hybrid application development has been around for about 6 years now. It was really kind of first came around in 2009 when the Adobe Corporation first developed PhoneGap. This is a bit of a side and a history lesson. PhoneGap eventually was open source to become Cordova. Those are the two kind of leaders, if you will, in hybrid development, but they're not the only ones. So every single one of these platforms has got some kind of hybrid technology, and many of them are downstreams of Cordova, or more commonly known as PhoneGap. Now, all of that results in pretty wide adoption, frankly. So this particular chart that you're looking at here, this comes from a Vision Mobile cross-platform report out of July 2015. And what you'll see here is Cordova PhoneGap occupies 2x mindshare and usage compared to its nearest competitor. In this case, its nearest competitor being Xamarin, quickly then followed by Unity. QT is actually an early entrant, and then it kind of trails off from there. QT has just really come around in the last year or so. So perhaps it's by virtue of its longevity. Perhaps it's by virtue of kind of maturity of the platform. Perhaps it's because Cordova gets you a wicked fast time to market and excellent cost control. This chart doesn't tell us that, but what does tell us is that people are using it in droves. Now, let's see what they're doing with it. Okay, Untapped, hybrid app. WeChat, hybrid app. Zynga Mob Wars, who knew, hybrid app. Swerkit, it's a workout app, hybrid. Instagram, hybrid. Feedly, hybrid. Uber, hybrid. AT&T, hybrid. Apple app and bookstores, hybrid apps. So yeah, it's kind of working for some people, right? And this is like clearly cherry picking some big names that some of you might recognize. That's on the consumer space, but there are thousands and tens of thousands on the enterprise side of things, ones which frankly I'm a little bit less able to share because, well, they're enterprise apps. A lot of them are internal and, you know. But that doesn't mean that Cordova is perfect. That doesn't mean that hybrid app architectures are perfect. They've got their flaws. They're human, right? So this right here, this is a slide with a couple of pull quotes taken from a survey that we did. This particular survey, at the time I pulled these quotes, we only had about 300 responses. Ultimately, we got to about 800 responses. It appeared on the Apache Cordova website. And so you see here a couple of themes for where people are not having a good time with hybrid app development. Okay, documentation, that kind of comes up pretty frequently. Documentation, this is kind of an ongoing problem with any technology. When documentation atrophies or documentation kind of gets out of date, especially with something that's moving as fast as cross-platform development, because it's not just the documentation for the cross-platform tool, but it's also documentation for each of the individual native platforms as well. So we got to do some work there. We got to bring the level of quality up there. You'll see some as well about plugin quality. There's a good one. Non-core plugins feel like hobby projects, not maintained well. For those of you that aren't familiar with what they mean by non-core, there are a set of basic building blocks that are commonly called the core plugins. That would be for things like the camera or the accelerometer or the address book. And then there are non-core plugins which are more specialized, but aren't really, they're kind of by cobbling together different parts of the native APIs. So a good example of a non-core plugin would be a polyfill for SQLite or for IndexedDB, that kind of thing. And so, you know what? We have some quality problems in some of the plugins. You also see one there. Every minor version bump something up. Well, that's not very nice of them. All right. You know what? This is a problem, not just for hybrid development, but for cross-platform development at large. Because as I said before, you've got each platform kind of iterating at their own cadence, right? Android releases, that doesn't mean that iOS is good enough to release at the exact same time for us, so we can just move along all at the same pace. Just because the platforms are releasing, you've got a bunch of other parts of the ecosystem that have to move along with it. Don't know if you guys know, but when you build for Android, you know, you also need Java running on your machine. Duh. You also need Node around. You also need Gradle. You also need about 13, 14 other pieces of the ecosystem. And all of those are open source projects that are iterating at their own pace as well. And so with all of those moving parts, that means that, like, keeping up with it and keeping a compatibility matrix is really, really difficult. And so within the hybrid space, that's a place where we need to focus on as well. To that end, and here I'll do a shameless Microsoft plug, because why not? We can. We recently released a command line tool called Taco. Taco is an acronym for Tools for Apache Cordova. If you want to check it out, go to taco.tools. And that actually solves some of those problems of trying to bring together all of those different parts of the tool chain into a well-tested, validated, compatible matrix so that you know when you're building a hybrid app, you're working with multiple pieces of a compatible tool chain. That's actually cool stuff, and that makes its way into Visual Studio as well. You also see, let's see here, writing a plugin, documentation, no single authority. I think we got them, right? So documentation's hard, version bumps are hard, plugins are hard. Okay, we got some work to do. So who's doing that work? Well, so for Cordova, which is the kind of the main source for a lot of the downstreams, Cordova provides the basic underlying platform for IBM Mobile First, for Ionic, for the Intel XDK, for the Visual Studio Tools for Apache Cordova, lots and lots of downstreams, for PhoneGap. These are the people, these are the large enterprises, large behemoths of the software industry that are contributing to make the Cordova platform stable and business ready. So Google, Adobe, Microsoft, frankly, those are the companies that are making the largest investments. Just below that, Meteor, IBM, Salesforce, Telerik, I never can, is it Telerik or Telerik? I never get the right pronunciation right. SAP, Ionic, and Monaco. Monaco is another IDE, and thousands of independent contributors. There are a lot of people that are engaged in this. Yeah, please. Oh, yeah, that's an excellent question. So the question was, all these 13 plus hundreds of independent, are they all collaborating? Absolutely. Cordova is an open source project. I'm actually a Cordova committer myself. We all collaborate through a number of different channels. There is a dev mailing list, there is a Slack channel, and then about once or twice a year, we all get together in the same place to hash out roadmaps and things like that. You'll actually see a totally ugly picture of us here in a minute because everyone's got to put the family photo in their slide deck, right? Well, so collaboration is actually very, very close between these organizations. I'm talking with the folks over at Adobe, IBM, Meteor, Google on a daily basis, multiple times a day. So it's really great to see. This is one of the places where organizations that are traditionally competitors kind of get together for a big group hug, and it's a really sweet moment, kind of Hallmark cut style. So let's take a look at kind of how those contributions are being made. Because it's interesting to know how these organizations, how these behemoths of the software industry are actually kind of collaborating together. So on the left-hand side, these are commits to the Cordova open source project over time. So the kind of green one is Microsoft commits, the blue one is Google commits, yellow is Adobe, and the red one is all those other independent contributors. And there's a lot of up and down here. Like, this particular one ended in June. The reason that Google's are going down right there is that was just before they released Marshmallow. And so what you tend to see is that their commits go down before a major platform release, and then they spike back up again when the major platform release happens. Adobe, made a bunch there in March and April. I think that coincided with iOS 9, I guess, maybe. I'm getting my timelines a little bit mixed up. And then Microsoft has been relatively steady throughout. So that's just raw numbers of commits. That says nothing about lines of code, just pull requests, right? This chart over here on the right is kind of an interesting one. This gives you an idea about where these companies are making their investments. So for Cordova Lib and plugins, those nice Neapolitan ice cream sandwiches that you see there, relatively even distribution between each of the different colors, that's healthy, that's good, that's what you want to see. Cordova Lib is kind of like the core runtime, the basic platform. And we're all making pretty even numbers of contributions there. We're also making pretty even numbers of contributions to the plugins themselves, right? So all of the organizations care equally about kind of keeping the project as a whole healthy and evenly divided. Where you start to see a little bit of segmentation and a little bit of clumping, if you will, is for the platforms themselves. And this isn't, you know, too much of a surprise, too mysterious. So Google makes the vast majority of contributions to the Android platform. iOS is controlled primarily by Adobe. And Microsoft is controlling primarily the Windows platform. We're all each contributing to the individual platform implementation, but then equally to the runtime and the plugins themselves. So that is the mark of a good, healthy, collaborating community. And I think that this is really, really good news for enterprises that want to make a bet on hybrid app development, because it says, like, hey, you've got a lot of resources, a lot of smart engineers who are contributing to making this a stable, reliable platform. And that results in a global audience. Now, this here is this is actually taken from Google Analytics, and this is just a quick representation of where people are visiting the Apache Cordova open source website. So I'm not taking into account here all of the downstreams. That would be another miraculous view, but this one is just for the open source project of Cordova itself. You'll see that you've got some nice concentrations in the US, Europe, kind of Western Europe is fairly healthy. China and India are very, very strong, and I'm really excited that Brazil is also huge. I cannot wait to go down to Rio and find out what those developers are doing and spend a little bit of time on their beaches. It should be super exciting. So, you know, nice, good distribution here, right? And this is supported by the growth curve of Cordova. And I think this really kind of gets back to my earlier thesis statement about mobile application development being in the early majority for enterprises. Because Cordova is the popular choice for so many enterprises that are starting to develop a mobile strategy, we've seen nice linear growth over the course of the last, is this 2 years or 2 years? Yeah, 2 years, right? Now, what you're seeing here, this is sourced from NPM Stats. Unfortunately, NPM Stats is kind of, from an absolute numbers, is plagued with inaccuracies. There's lots of reasons for that. I won't do a data analysis lesson on you right now, but the trend line is fairly reliable. We've got nice linear growth between November of 2013 and this November. And this is kind of a different view on the same data, but what it does is it shows you what the growth is compared to other cross-platform tools in the same space. And you'll see here, PhoneGap Cordova went from 30, just north of 30% to just north of 60%. Whereas the nearest competitors, and these are some of the same competitors that you saw, when was that, maybe 10 slides earlier? So Xamarin, you know, they show, don't get me wrong, they show growth, but it's much smaller growth than what you're seeing in the Cordova space. Same thing with Unity. Like I said, Qt just got added in the last year. Adobe Air actually saw shrinkage. And I want to kind of tie this back again to my assertion earlier about, once again, enterprises generally choosing hybrid applications as their model for when they make those first steps into mobile application development. For consumer applications, because the market is already mature and they've already settled on their stack, I wouldn't expect to see a lot of growth here. But since enterprises are in that early majority where they're starting to explode, where they're starting to grow, what this tells me is that hybrid application development, and this is borne out in the interviews that we have, tends to be the popular choice. Now, we did a little survey. This is from the same survey earlier, where we looked at what some of the frustrations were of developers, and we kind of asked them of some of the basics about how they're using the platform. Now, a lot of these you wouldn't be too surprised by. In fact, the platforms they're targeting, Android and iOS, yeah, that makes sense. That's kind of in line with what you expect to be the market adoption of those particular platforms. All right, Windows kind of trailing after that. Good news. All right, what version of Cordova are you using for your projects? This is an interesting one. Greater than 5.x. So this survey was taken when 5.0 as the Cordova platform had just been released. That means that developers and organizations in general are upgrading very, very quickly to the latest version of Cordova. This is desirable because, frankly, that's where all of the bug fixes and the new development is happening. But you've still got some organizations that are lagging behind in the 4 series, the 3 series, and below. And so if you choose to go with hybrid application as a model and choose to use Cordova, I would encourage all of you to try to stay on that leading edge. Stay with the majority, because that's the safest place to be in terms of stable platform, most number of bug fixes, and you're going to have the least amount of trouble with your kind of your development strategy. Lower left-hand corner here, would you recommend it to a friend? All right, I want to give myself a pat on the back, right? As a committer, we're doing our job. Most people would recommend Cordova to a friend. It kind of settles in the 8 to 10 category. And so satisfaction, at least at the kind of boots on the ground, people that are actually writing code, tends to be pretty high. That says that, to me, the developers can be productive with the platform. And with the plugin ecosystem, we see about what we'd expect based upon some of the verbatim comments from earlier. We heard people talking about how, you know, plugins outside of core felt like hobby projects, felt a little bit lackluster in quality. And that feeling of kind of bugginess is reflected in the satisfaction. It kind of plateaus around 6 or 7 there. And so we know that we've got a little bit of work to do. Now, that tells me how people are using the platform, or at least what platforms they're targeting, but it doesn't tell me what they're actually doing inside of their code itself. And so one of the things that we did is we created this little word cloud here, right? And this word cloud from the same survey shows you what technologies people are using inside of their applications. And this is interesting because it's a lot of the same frameworks and technologies that you would expect to see in a word cloud made for general web development, right? You see Angular in there, and Gulp, and Sass, and jQuery, and Bootstrap. If you're building web applications, man, that's part of your basic toolbox, right? That's exactly what you'd expect to see. And what this should tell you is that organizations are picking up with their existing web development skills. They are translating those directly over to mobile application development, and they're finding some success there. They're able to get going quickly. They're able to reappropriate existing skills so they don't have to learn Java, learn Swift, learn Objective-C, learn Go, whatever it is that they would need to retarget their career and ultimately cost their company more money by kind of sort of suffering through that learning curve. And there's a couple kind of new ones that you might see there as well. For those of you that may not be familiar with it, Ionic is a big one in the kind of lower right-hand corner. That is a framework that is designed specifically for hybrid application development. It's actually a control library. Right? Now, this tells us what people are using, but it doesn't tell us how people are successful, right? So this is an interesting one. Here's what we did. We did a scan of apps in the store, and we said, you know what? We want to find out which frameworks are characteristic of a successful app versus which frameworks are characteristic of a less successful application, right? Is there any kind of affinity that we can draw, or conclusion that we can draw based upon the kind of JavaScript that you're using with the success of the application? Now, this is of the public app store, so not enterprise apps. And what each of these reflects is a ratio of the number of 5-star apps to the number of 1-star apps that are using those particular frameworks. So being low on the left is bad. Being high on the right is good, because that means you have more 5-to-1 stars. Makes sense? This is kind of a hard chart to read, but that's the basic gist of it. Now, I have a personal theory about this. This is totally unvalidated conjecture on my part, but you know, let's indulge for just a moment. Here's what I think is going on. Those frameworks on the far left-hand side, these are the frameworks that really came into their own during an era that was dominated by the desktop browser. jQuery, that sucker's been around for like, what, 12, 13 years, something like that. Knockout, okay, 5 or 6 years, maybe more, something like that. As you get towards the right-hand side, you start to see frameworks that have really come into their own during the mobile era. I didn't include the slide in here, but it's like it's an absurd amount of web browsing today happens on mobile devices. It's like 80% or more, right? I forget what the exact number is. But so what that means is that frameworks that are developed in the last 2-3 years maybe, those tend to be optimized for devices that have less memory, that maybe have a kind of a little bit less of a kick when it comes to optimization for performance. And so what I think you're seeing here is that those on the right, those that are newer, tend to be more performant, tend to get higher scores, and overall make for more successful applications. All right, I promised I would share a family photo. Here's the family photo. These are the people who are actually kind of probably the most active developers working on the Cordova project today. I'm the guy behind the camera. And this is actually from a summit that we had in Redmond, I don't know, maybe about a month ago now. These are folks from IBM and from Salesforce and from Adobe and from Google and Intel. And all of us kind of came together for sort of biannual. Does biannual mean once, twice a year or once every 2 years? Twice yearly, we'll call it twice yearly, right? Our twice yearly summit where we kind of nail out the roadmap. And so here's that roadmap. Here are the things that the Cordova community, once again, the kind of the source for a lot of the downstreams of hybrid application development. These are the things that we're focusing on in the next 6 months. These are kind of cool. Okay, you saw a bunch of frustration around documentation. So you know what? We're going to knuckle down and we're going to fix some of the documentation problems. My team at Microsoft, my product team's number one priority right now is documentation and customer onboarding. I can't tell you how many people I've got just thinking about how we improve those docs. Driving quality into the plugin ecosystem. Okay, this is a critical one, especially when you see the number and the diversity of plugins that are out there. And so what we kind of took as our command here is not only to triage the backlog of bugs that kind of have accrued over the course of the last year for plugins, but also we've gotten to a place in the plugin ecosystem where there are a lot of quirks for each plugin. I'll give a good example. The camera plugin for Android only has a cropping API. Well, it turns out you can't crop on iOS, and so it ends up looking like I implement this, it should, from a code perspective, I write the same JavaScript, it should work across all of the different platforms, but it doesn't. And so that causes confusion among developers. And so what we want to do is we want to trim those plugins back so that they provide normalized behavior across all of the platforms and those places where there are special functionality or special things that you can execute on a per platform basis. Those become opt-in behaviors that you have to kind of voluntarily add to your application so that there's a little bit better awareness that those APIs are specific to a particular platform. Unified versioning to assist with stability. This is what I talked about earlier with taco.tools. Seriously, go check it out. Really, this is a tool to help unify all of the different toolchain components and all of the platforms and help maintain a better, well-configured development environment so that you can move on to work to writing your application code without wasting 1, 2, or 3 days trying to configure your development environment. Super important and super frustrating. Has anyone like ever been in that place where you've been like 2 or 3 days trying to set up your dev environment and you just can't write freaking code? Okay, you know my problem, right? It sucks. Nobody wants that. So use Taco tools. Support for emerging native APIs. So this is a critical one. We've got new versions of the platform coming out left and right. Like Android Marshmallow just came out and iOS 9 was out not too long ago when Windows is promising to release like super frequently, kind of once the wheels get rolling on this whole Windows 10 thing. And so making sure that hybrid app development iterates and makes all those new native APIs available on day one is super important. We achieved that with Windows 10. When it was released, the Cordova platform was released on the same day. For Android Marshmallow, we've got support coming out in the next couple weeks, I believe. For iOS 9, we actually just released, ahead of schedule, I should have updated my slide. We just released support for that ahead of schedule Today's Thursday, so 5 days ago, 5 days ago. So we're making incredible progress there towards delivering native API support on day zero or as close to it as we can, and we're gonna continue working on that. So I wanna end by talking about kind of where hybrid development or where JavaScript development more broadly is going over the course of the next couple of years. And so here's a good way of thinking about the spectrum of mobile application development. Usually it kind of comes from two sides. On the far left-hand side, you've got the web. Very egalitarian, HTML, CSS, JavaScript, web technologies are very portable. And so if you want to hit a breadth of devices, a breadth of endpoints, the web is a really great way to go. Provides, you know, maximum code sharing, and you know, you get access to device capabilities, although admittedly it is federated or sort of in between, arbitrated was the word I used there, arbitrated by a kind of a layer, and in this case that's the Cordova layer. On the right-hand side, you've got native applications. Very, very little or no code sharing, but highly customized, premium UX, and great for consumer applications at large. So, I told you guys there was fancy animations. So, in the middle here, I've kind of drawn a line. I've said everything to the left of that line uses a web view. Everything to the right of that line does not use a web view. And let's take a look at some of the different kind of technologies and cross-platform options that are available out there. So on the far left-hand side, penned websites. This is a website that just by virtue of having a manifest, you can pin to your homepage, and that gives it at least homepage visibility, but ultimately, still a website, you're still just opening up your browser. Okay, one step to the right, Manifold.js. Manifold.js, in the end, actually uses Cordova as its underlying architecture, but what this essentially allows you to do is to build out a hosted application that still has access to native device capabilities, but in the end, it's still hosted on a server somewhere, and so you need to be online in order to consume any of the application. A little bit to the right of that, Apache Cordova and its downstreams, like IBM Mobile First, PhoneGap, Intel XDK. I happen to put Ionic a little bit to the right of that. It's also an Apache Cordova downstream, but because it has a control framework that's built in with it, you could say that it provides a little bit richer experience than Cordova does by itself, since Cordova does not inherently provide a control framework. You're just working with divs and buttons and HTML tags, right? It's kind of roll your own. Now, as you start to move to the right across that bridge, that web view bridge, we start to get to places where you do not use a web view. In other words, we actually have native controls here. But some of these are using JavaScript. In fact, I'll advance it one more. Everything that's got a little yellow marker there, that's using JavaScript in one way or another. Or it's using JavaScript as its primary mechanism for writing out the data. So Tabrys.js basically allows you to write out native controls purely from JavaScript. So there's no markup that you ever write. All of the controls are created imperatively. Titanium, a similar type of architecture, although there is a kind of a XAML-like markup that you use. Native script, many of you may have actually seen the native script presentation 2 hours ago. Another brilliant invention that shares a lot in common with one of its near ones there, React Native. Oh, native script, I probably should have put a little bit of JavaScript-y on that. Xamarin, right in there as well. And on the far end, transpilers. Here, when I say transpilers, what I mean are things like the Windows iOS bridge or the Android iOS bridge. Now, what I want you to draw from this is that JavaScript at large in the mobile development space is really, really dominating the space. And I believe that this is because a lot of enterprise organizations are trying to take those existing skills, those JavaScript web development skills, and transport them back to mobile application development. And I suspect that this is going to continue. This is, again, pure conjecture on my part. This is my best to see into the future. right? But what I think you're going to start to see happening is a push into the center as Apache Cordova starts to bring in more native controls through plugins. It starts to adopt some of the same patterns and behaviors that you see in React Native, NativeScript, Tabris, and Titanium. And things on the web will therefore start to move closer to the native side of things, where they provide richer experiences, higher quality UX, right? And ultimately, JavaScript, it's going to continue to be one of the major contenders for cross-platform languages and mobile application development at large. So if you take anything away from this, please take away from it that in the mobile application development space, JavaScript, it's alive and well, and hybrid application development in particular is really dominating, especially the enterprise space. And I expect that to continue for a long time to come. Microsoft stands behind it with a full throat, or at least as much as my laryngitis-stricken throat will allow me to. So, having said that, thank you all so very, very much. I truly appreciate your time.